Hello, I'm Mike Mendel. This is number 0667, the Stuff File program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0667. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Georgia Umano is the author of Terriers in the Jungle, and she's an animal and environmental advocate. She strongly believes that elephants should not be in captivity for either zoos or entertainment venues, and has worked very hard to prevent that.
I was one of the many protesters who fought against the big Ringling Brothers circuses for years. Every time they came to Los Angeles, we were out there in droves passing out flyers and demonstrating. And it was because a lot of local laws were passed based on all the demonstrations around the country that local communities said they do not want Ringling coming to their area. And so many areas were shut down that it made it very difficult for Ringling to continue.
Jennifer Lieberman, who is an actress and filmmaker, has just turned her one-woman show into a best-selling book called Year of the What? What exactly is the what?
Well, the original title was Year of the Slut, and it was adapted from my award-winning solo show. However, when I originally published it with that title, I came into a lot of roadblocks with censorship online, and I got flagged from advertising on every platform I tried to advertise on, including Amazon, where the book was available. So I had to change the title.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter digs deep into Paul McCartney's song archives with his expansive book, The Lyrics. So forget the scrambled eggs. Just get ready for the McCartney Rock Show later on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0667, was Mike Mendel, president and managing director of Global NTT Entertainment and Consulting, Inc., a 360-degree entertainment consulting firm and gaming studio helping your dream projects become a reality. Thank you very much, Mike, for doing the guest late on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff. According to the Conrad Public School District in Conrad, Montana, there's an old law on the books that stipulates that a school principal is responsible for feeding and tending a horse if a student rides it to school. On May 23rd, 12 students at Conrad High School put the statute to the test, riding their steeds up to the school and leaving them in the care of Principal Raymond DeBrooker throughout the school day. Apparently, DeBrooker had no time to comment while he kept his charges watered and fed and presumably mucked the parking lot. Well, first of all, this is a principal who has a keen sense of humor to honor such an antiquated law, and this is the kind of school story I like to talk about, not the other kind. To the other kind, I say nay. And speaking of horses, 33-year-old Stephanie Kirchner, a farmer who works at a stud farm near her home in Schubach, Germany, has had to make some changes since gas prices have climbed in the wake of the war in Ukraine. Instead of riding to work in her Toyota SUV, she's now riding a horse or driving a horse-drawn carriage to her job, which is about 3.5 miles away. It makes what was once a 10 to 15 minute commute take up to an hour, but she saves about $264 a month. She said children like the horses, but humanity is hectic and then some people are annoyed if they can't get past me fast enough. Another downside? I can't put a horse in a parking garage. Gee, if only you had people like the principal from the last story in your town. And speaking of Ukraine, Viktor Kovtikov, described as a retired Russian military officer, apparently swiped a live handheld anti-tank weapon from a battlefield in eastern Ukraine and drove it home in the back of his SUV. When he parked in a small town a few miles northeast of Moscow, the battlefield souvenir exploded, tearing off the back of the SUV. Kovtikov and a friend were injured. Do you get the feeling that when this war is finally over and Ukraine comes out victorious, that as a country that has not only shown their steely resolve, but also their keen sense of humor, that they will create a new Ukrainian version of the American 60s sitcom Hogan's Heroes, where it's the Russians who will look like buffoons? Right now, it doesn't exactly seem like it's that much of a stretch.
Oh, I see nothing. I was not here. I did not even get up this morning.
Iberia Parish, Louisiana sheriff's officers were called out at 3:30 a.m. on May 22nd because of a house found abandoned on a trailer attached to a truck. The rig was blocking the road, and signs, mailboxes, and trees had been damaged along the street. In addition, power lines and poles had been hit, knocking out power to about 700 customers in the area. Deputies arrested 46-year-old Tony Dominique and 32-year-old Nico Como. They had been told they needed permits to move the home, but they went ahead and tried to do it on their own anyway. Both men were held at Iberia Parish Jail. Well, they have a new home now. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, in South Sudan, inmates at a military camp have a new jailbird to get to know. Or maybe that should be jail sheep. A ram was arrested and convicted in May of murdering an African woman by hitting her in the ribs, and the old woman died immediately. Said Police Chief Major Elijah Mabor, the owner is innocent and the ram is the one who perpetrated the crime, so it deserves to be arrested. However, the owner has also been ordered to pay 5 cows to the victim's family. Well, there's a criminal who will no longer be on the lam. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? People the world over have a deep affection for the largest land animals. That would be elephants. Currently, only a small percentage of pachyderms remain in the wild. To allow more people to enjoy them, many elephants have been corralled into lives of captivity in zoos and entertainment venues. Georgia Umano is an author and animal environmental advocate. She's the author of Terriers in the Jungle, and she joins us via Zoom from California. Hi, Georgia.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. I take it that being an animal and an environmental advocate, that you're not a fan of the idea of zoos or entertainment venues, correct?
That's correct. I was one of the many protesters who fought against the big Ringling Brothers circuses for years. Every time they came to Los Angeles, we were out there in droves and passing out flyers and demonstrating. And it was because a lot of local laws were passed based on all the demonstrations around the country that local communities said they do not want Ringling coming to their area. And so many areas were shut down that it made it very difficult for Ringling to continue.
Now, let's go to your book, which is called, as I mentioned, Terriers in the Jungle. Let's start off by the title. Why Terriers in the Jungle?
Terriers in the Jungle is a novel, but it's based on real life experiences where I've been an elephant advocate for a number of years, and I had made several trips to Kenya writing articles about conservation and elephants and travel. And the last time I was there, 2017, I said to my husband, I want to live here because we had such a wonderful time every time. It's so beautiful there. I love the animals. So he said, okay. So we came home, we packed up our things, made arrangements, and we went back there, not knowing how long we were going to be there. So of course I had to bring my two dogs with me. They're two little rescue dogs. And and they came, and we had a lot of adventures over there. And the dogs, I realized, were having their own adventures and meeting wild animals. So I just started writing down their adventures. So Terriers in the Jungle is their story written from their voices. And so they're both talking the whole time, telling about themselves, their family, their trip to Africa, and all the things that happened.
So let's get back to the elephants themselves. As I mentioned in the introduction, only a small percentage remain in the wild. So I'm sure you don't want to see animals in captivity. Is it possible to return animals that have been in captivity for years back into the wild?
Well, that depends really on the animal and the situation. But say, in
well, I'm talking primarily about elephants right now. Just elephants.
In the case of elephants, you know, after many of them have been stolen from the wild when they were babies. And so they never learned all the lessons from their mothers that they would have learned in the wild, how to forage for food, how to survive, and many things. So it would be very difficult to try to take an elephant that was in a zoo for 20 years and just throw them back into the jungle. So that's why they have sanctuaries. And we have three sanctuaries in the States. And the sanctuaries are very good. They give the elephants lots of space to roam around, and they slowly introduce them to other elephants, and they make their own choices. The elephants can decide, do they want to be friends, not be friends? Do they want to walk here? Do they want to go there? Do they want to stay and do nothing? I mean, they give them as much freedom as they possibly can.
So again, going back to the fact that the small percentage of elephants remain in the wild, are there diminishing numbers because of poaching or capturing for zoos and entertainment, or a combination of both?
A combination of both of those things, plus one other thing, is what they call the human-animal conflict. And that's where, and now I'm going to talk about Kenya for a moment. And Kenya is the only country that has outlawed trophy hunting. And they have clamped down hard on poachers. But they have a population explosion in Africa. And so people are starting to build farms on the ancient migratory routes of these animals. The animals, for hundreds of years, they've walked on these routes. When the seasons change, they have to go where there's more foliage, more water. And now when they walk on their normal route, they run into a farm and there's crops on there. And so of course they're gonna start munching on the crops. And that's when the farmers who depend on the crops for their livelihood and don't really know anything about wild animals, because they're mostly not well-educated people in those situations, they get out their poison arrows and they shoot them.
Wow. So what can be done, as someone like yourself who is an environmental advocate, what can be done, not necessarily for the ones in captivity or in entertainment venues, because a lot is being done for that, what can be done to make sure that they are safe in their own environment?
Well, education mostly, and protections in the local areas. When I was there, I was working with some girls who were from those kind of areas. And I was at first shocked to realize that they knew nothing about wildlife and even their environment. I mean, this is something which is not taught in school. And then later I realized it's not taught in our schools much either, at least not when I was coming up. And so, and then also a lot of the girls over there, the young girls, they get raped and they have babies. And as soon as they get raped, they never go back to school. So there's a huge segment of the population, which is their resources are completely wasted. So one of my personal goals is I want to start a new school, a new kind of school in Kenya called the Elephant Matriarch School, and it's for young mothers and children. And it's going to be for these girls, these young mothers, and it's going to send them back to school. And all of their lessons are going to be based around nature and animal. And this is my goal anyway, to bring in other experts to come and talk to them and get these girls in a really high position in terms of knowing about the environment. And then the reason it's the Elephant Matriarch School is because, as I told my students, you will be the matriarchs in your community. You are a strong mother. You are going to learn what you need to do and go back and teach your community. And I think this would be a great resource.
Where did your love of elephants begin and how?
Oh, boy. I once had a past life experience where I was an elephant, but that happened many years ago. And before I was even thinking about animals or elephants or anything, it came out of nowhere. And it was, at the time, it was interesting, but I just, you know, just kept on going, didn't really know what it was about. But years later, when I got a dog, I fell so in love with my dog. And then I kept wanting to know more about animals and more about the animal world. And I fell in with some elephant advocates, and I learned a lot from them. And a couple of conservationists came over from Africa, and they talked to us. And the more I learned, the more I was drawn in. I had no idea any of the things about elephants, how amazing they are, how intelligent they are. You know, a baby elephant's brain is bigger than a whole human baby. And the way they help each other, and they help other animals, they're like very kind animals. And the way that they shaped our whole world, because at one time elephants were on every continent, and they shaped, because there's their massive size, by walking and eating, and like you had in your other program, the digestion is not good. So they're always, you know, pooping out this rich poop that starts new growth in the land. So that's how forests have grown up because of these elephants, and also how the forests became more friendly for other animals, because when they walk through there, they sort of tear down the little growth, and it makes the big growth go much bigger and much more carbon capture. And in fact, this has been studied by the International Monetary Fund. And one elephant, because of the carbon capture that they permit and they create in their environment, one elephant is worth millions of dollars just to leave it alone.
So they do have a positive impact on global ecosystems.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a fascinating story indeed. And I want to mention your book one more time. It's Terriers in the Jungle. It's a novel, but it touches on some of the things we've talked about, including your two little dogs.
Yes.
Georgia, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Animal and environmental advocate Georgia Umano, author of Terriers in the Jungle. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0667, and you'll find links to Georgia's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
There's still more guests, more news, and an idiot of the day coming your way on The Stuff File program. Stay tuned. The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
use a penny for your thoughts from the Stuff File program coming to you from Montreal, Canada, a country that doesn't have pennies.
And still to come on the program, you'll meet the author of Year of the What? And Stuart Nullman will be along with another edition of Book Banter. There is, of course, an Idiot of the Day and much more in Stuff File news right here, right now. So let's get right back to it. While a team of bee removal experts were summoned to Louisiana's largest airport to remove more than 15,000 swarming insects that had taken up residence on a piece of equipment. Craig Forsyth of Bee Guys LLC said he and his team responded to Louis Armstrong International Airport in New Orleans after being contacted by Delta Airlines workers. Forsyth said about 15,000 honeybees were found swarming on a piece of equipment used for loading and unloading luggage from planes. Forsyth told local news the bees were safely removed and relocated to a special place. Well, I'm guessing that special place would be at the Spirit Airlines reservation desk. They're already known for making your travel an obstacle course. A man in Japan, identified as Toko, has spent almost $16,000 to make himself look like a collie, fulfilling his dream and depleting his savings in one fell swoop. Toko contracted with a professional company called Zeppit, which makes sculptures and costumes for movies and amusement facilities, to create a costume that is extremely realistic. It took 40 days to build. Said Toko, "I made it a collie because it looks real when I put it on. Long-haired dogs can mislead the human figure. I met such a condition, and I made a collie my favorite breed of dog." Well, this is yet another classic case of someone who has more dollars than sense. By the way, if you want to see this slightly creepy costume yourself, just go to the page for this week's Stuff File program and see the human lassie in all his splendor and glory. After 51-year-old Michael Calvo of Cape Coral, Florida, crashed his semi-truck into the back of a Publix grocery store in Haines City on May 26. He didn't immediately get out of the cab because, he told the officer, he thought he was being pranked for a reality TV show. When the officer was able to remove Calvo from the truck, he asked if he had fallen asleep or suffered a medical emergency, to which Calvo answered, "I was smoking my meth pipe." Calvo was arrested on multiple charges, although the deputy police chief did express his appreciation for Calvo's honesty. Well, honesty is the best policy. Yeah. Pennsylvania State Police say an Emporium man is facing multiple felonies after authorities say he attempted to steal a vehicle and then a helicopter from the Emporium barracks. Authorities were dispatched to the barracks for a report that a man, identified as 39-year-old Michael Roberto, was attempting to steal a pickup truck from the parking. Investigators say Roberto had left the barracks prior to troopers arriving on scene. Police say at the time a helicopter was landing at the barracks, and troopers say they then witnessed Roberto sprinting toward the aircraft. Authorities say Roberto attempted to access the cockpit of the helicopter, but was kept away by the pilot, whom police say had to hold the doors shut to prevent Roberto from getting inside. Police say Roberto was taken into custody with drug paraphernalia found on his person. Troopers also noted that Roberto appeared to be intoxicated at the time of the incident. You know, people often think that they can fly when they're intoxicated, but that thought doesn't usually involve a helicopter. And we have one more Stuff File news story before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. And this story starts off with a quote. That quote comes from Santa Rosa County, Florida Sheriff Bob Johnson, speaking of his deputies who heard that 29-year-old Anthony Barnes had been spotted in the area. Barnes, who was on work release from prison, escaped 2 weeks before and was considered armed and dangerous. And he had fled police before and has multiple felony convictions. He was at least easy to spot. His face and neck are well covered with tattoos. But it was the dogs who found him. Said the sheriff, "Those bloodhounds, when they get a track, you're getting caught." Barnes had flipped over a plastic kiddie pool and was hiding underneath. Now, this to me is the quote of the day, which was uttered by the sheriff. The old saying in Santa Rosa County is, "You can't fix stupid, but you can give it a court date." Wow, that tagline should be on a DA's business card. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Jennifer Lieberman is an actress, film producer, and now a best-selling, award-winning author. Her prize novel is called Year of the What? Jennifer joins us via Zoom from Toronto. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
So what is the Year of the What?
Well, the original title was Year of the Slut, and it was adapted from my award-winning solo show. However, when I originally published it with that title, I came into a lot of roadblocks with censorship online, and I got flagged from advertising on every platform I tried to advertise on, including Amazon, where the book was available. So I had to change the title.
Now, considering the concept of the show you were doing and why you turned it into a book, did having to change the name kind of either defeat the purpose or exacerbate the cause behind the title in the first place?
Well, it was really challenging because I had the title first. And I developed the one-woman show around the title. I had just moved to LA. I was trying to find an agent and a manager and work, all those fabulous things that out-of-work actors try to do when they, you know, take the leap to Hollywood. So the friend who suggested that I do a one-woman show, we were kind of hashing out ideas, and I just kind of jokingly threw out that title. And she's like, "That's perfect. It'll grab people's attention and it will get them into the theater." The first run of the show in LA didn't really get people into the theater, kind of like Emma Stone's role in La La Land. Nobody really came, but I thought I had something there. And it's a sex positive coming of age story, and it's a feminist piece. So it was basically kind of deconstructing a word that's weaponized against young women. And the title proved to be a huge success when I took the show to New York. I had no problems advertising in the Village Voice, in Time Out New York. And I got so many butts in seats that I ended up winning the Audience Choice Award for the film, for the theater piece. So when I was suggested to turn it into a novel, everyone was excited about it because of the title. So it was super disheartening being dead in the water once I finally published the book and found that there were so many roadblocks with censorship that I just couldn't get it out there.
So what was the process like for you in just creating the show? Because you said you created it from the title alone and built it from there. So is this a cathartic situation for you where you needed to get this out and turn it into a show?
No, it was more of creating something that could showcase my acting ability and my writing ability. So I was trying to write a commercial comedy that could get Hollywood's attention, but at the same time, I played 10 different characters. I played all the characters. I engaged the audience for an hour and 20 minutes by myself on stage. Any performer can tell you that, like, the one-woman show or the one-man show is kind of like the test of, do you have the chops? There's no second take. There's nobody else on stage to help you out. And it's a real kind of pressure cooker for your talent and your ability as a performer. So that's basically what I did. And I wanted to write something that's going to make people laugh and make people cry and be provocative and a little irreverent. And it was loosely based on my experience, like the first year after my first heartbreak. But it took on a life of its own in order to, you know, showcase 10 different characters and accents and, you know, playing males and females and different age groups and all of that stuff. So so it wasn't a catharsis for the story, but it was a way for me to show like the whole gamut of what I could do as an actor while writing a piece that was super funny and engaging and intelligent.
So this was a showcase to show your acting chops and your skills.
Yes.
At what point did you say to yourself, or did the idea come that maybe I've got a book here?
I actually never thought it would be a book. It was other people. Once I won the Audience Choice Award in New York, anyone who heard the title would just stop in their tracks and be like, that should be a book. That would be a great chick lit novel. That would be so great. I would buy it off the shelf just from the title. I wouldn't even need to read the book jacket. So everyone just kind of freaked out about how clever the title was. I even have this kind of crazy story where I accosted Robert Downey Jr. walking down the street. He was running away from me. I was trying to engage him, to invite him to the show, and he was not interested in engaging with me. And finally, I was like, I have a one-woman show. I just wanted to invite you. And I gave him the postcard, and he literally stopped in his tracks, turned around, and engaged in a conversation with me. Like, oh my God, this is your title. This is your show. This is nuts. Like, this is fabulous. So, you know, it was really hard. When I say really hard, like, that's not even like the right definition, but it was like excruciating for me to change the title in order to get the book out.
Well, now that you've had the success on stage and now you have the book out, is there a possibility that you could even reach a bigger stage? In other words, not just a New York stage, but a Broadway stage.
Well, in all honesty, I'm no longer interested in doing the show. I worked on the one-woman show for 2 years, then I was hired to do somebody else's one-woman show. And it's very lonely working on stage by yourself. So I'm not interested in that, but I am interested in creating either a TV series or a film out of it.
Well, the other side of the coin, too, is you've made it a successful book. As you mentioned, in your one-woman show, you played many parts. So could you not rewrite it as a Broadway play that had many parts, not just yours?
I could. That's definitely a possibility. But at this point in time, like I've been with this project for many years, and I'm ready to move on to something else. So I'm looking to sell it and pursue other endeavors,
well,
so to speak.
with the success of your one-woman show and now the novel, as your success continues to climb, is there always the possibility of reverting back to the actual title in a subsequent edition?
Actually, it's interesting. I just returned from the Cannes Film Festival, and I had several meetings about developing the piece as either a film or a TV series. Every single person I met with said, if we do this project, we're going back to the original title. And trust me, I had the book out for a year and a half with the original title before I finally relented and changed the title to something else. But years ago, when I was in a business class, somebody said, you can be right or you can be happy. And I decided, okay, keeping my title is me wanting to be right. Me changing the title to give the book a chance in the marketplace and being able to achieve some sort of success would be me being happy. So I feel like I made the right decision changing the title for the literary audience, because if I kept the original title, There's no way I would have become a bestseller. There's no way I would have won these awards. There's no way I would have been able to move forward with the piece in the way that I have with this new title.
Okay, so when you came up with the original title, both for the show and then later on for the book, did you have any pushback, not necessarily from a publisher, but from people in your inner circle, your family, friends, that kind of thing?
So I did, my grandmother, because for months I was talking about this show that I was working on, this show, but I never told my grandmother the name of the show. And finally, she's like, Jennifer, you keep talking about this show. What's the name of it? So I said, well, Bubby, it's called Year of the Slut. And she's like, no, why? Why would you do such a thing? And I said, Bub, if I called it A Jewish Girl Looking for Love, nobody would buy tickets. And she paused for a minute. And then she responded, she said, you know what? You're a smart cookie. So even my grandmother, who, God bless her, she's in her 90s now. She was in her late 80s at the time. Even she got it. So, of course, my dad wasn't happy about it, but his mother got it. And as long as my grandma got it, I felt like I had her blessing and I was happy to move forward.
Well, I'm sure many people will get it. The book is entitled The Year of the What. We now know what was originally. Jennifer, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much, Peter. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Actress Jennifer Lieberman, author of Year of the What. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0667, and you'll find links to Jennifer's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And here he is once again, the fabulous Stuart Nolman. Hello, Stu.
Hi, Peter and Jet. Jet.
Are you having a stroke?
No, I'm just recalling one of my favorite songs from one of my favorite albums by one of my favorite singer-songwriters.
Oh, okay.
Because, Peter, on this edition of Book Banter, we're going to do a little... we're going to celebrate a milestone birthday because Paul McCartney, the most famous and prolific singer-songwriter in the rock era, is about to turn 80.
Wow. Just think, all of those screaming girls who were at the Ed Sullivan Show are probably in homes right now.
Yeah, probably. And they don't have the teeth to do the, all that screaming anymore. You know? But, yeah, Sir Paul is fourscore years old. Can you believe that?
Wow.
But, you know what? Throughout his career, he firmly believed that each song that he wrote since the age of 14 was like a memoir. And each one directly or indirectly telling us a story of a part of his life. So, you know, when you thought about the three of his former Beatles bandmates, you know, John, George, and Ringo, they wrote books of different stripes, but not Paul. Paul did a couple of kids' books, but not one for adult readers. But now Paul's made his literary mark for his adult fans with his impressive keepsake two-volume tome called plainly The Lyrics.
Now you say tome, just how big is this thing?
This is, I'm telling you, it's a two-volume book. It's in a beautiful slipcase. It's, you know, they're hardcovers, obviously. I think we're talking about, 500 pages, give or take.
So for the few remaining listeners who remember the days of Book Banter on my old radio show, how would it survive in the Book Banter drop test?
Well, put it this way, the decibels will be ear-shattering.
Okay, gotcha.
There will be no desk left.
Gotcha, okay.
It is that impressive. But so this is Paul telling his nearly 80 years of life and times through his songs. You know, whether it be through his Liverpool days, he wrote his first song at 14 as a tribute to his late mother, through the Beatles, Wings, the solo efforts for albums, and even for, he did TV and movie themes, and his flirtation with opera through the Liverpool Oratorio. Now, each song is profiled in the books has the basic information such as the release date, the recording time, and the album it appeared on, or if it just appeared as a single, and also, of course, complete lyrics that you could sing along with Paul. But this book, what I loved about it is a chock full of fascinating stories behind each song and its respective evolution. And one of my favorite stories, and you'll appreciate this one, is the story behind the Live and Let Die theme.
Oh, yes. Please share.
Yes, I certainly will. Well, this was an occasion where Paul worked with George Martin for the first time since the Beatles breakup. George Martin was doing the entire score of Live and Let Die. And Paul knew someone at EMI who had a connection with Eon Productions, the company that produces the Bond films. And he just casually mentioned, you know, would you like to do the theme song for the next Bond film? So they had to twist Paul's arm for this one. So he enthusiastically agreed to it. And he said he had a great time working with George Martin doing the theme song. And so they made a demo, and George Martin brought it to the Caribbean location of Live and Let Die, where he presented it to Albert Broccoli, the head honcho for producer of the Bond films. And he presented it to Broccoli, and Broccoli said, and he gave it a listen. He said, "Well, this is fine, but who's going to sing it in the final version of the song?" And George Martin replied, "This is the final version." Aren't you glad that Broccoli decided to go with George Martin's convictions?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing, getting off topic just a little bit, the fact that there are so many, and you know how big a Bond fan I am, there are so many great theme songs to so many great James Bond films, none of which ever won Best Oscar for music, and yet the last three have all won.
Yeah, but Live and Let Die was nominated.
I was nominated, I know.
It was nominated, and it was a great theme song.
Was it?
You have to admit.
I have to tell you right now, right off the bat, it's my favorite Bond theme.
And also, right after that part of the story of in the book, there's four beautifully colored photos of McCartney playing Live and Let Die during his recent tours with all the, you know, the fireworks and the explosions and all that. It's one of the highlights of Paul McCartney show these days, and I saw it for myself. So it is, it's really something.
Excellent.
So now this book, yeah, go ahead.
No, Peter. No, go ahead.
Well, I just want to say that besides, you know, the story, the background stories and all the information and the complete lyrics, the books also have rare photos of Paul in the recording studio working on the songs or album in question. There's artifacts, including the red jacket that he wore when the Beatles did the Strawberry Fields Forever promotional film. There's original trade ads. And also the original handwritten lyrics. There's examples of the songs in its handwritten form. But this book is a must-have for Beatles fans everywhere. Like I said, it's beautifully presented, you know, with the slipcase and it's, you know, and hardcover with and everything. It's really a great keepsake. And it has become a main part of your Beatle bookshelf. It's a fascinating, satisfying book, and it's probably the closest thing we'll have to a Paul McCartney memoir. But he's telling his own story the way he knows best, and we're all grateful for that.
And the book, the cost of it is?
Well, I hope all the listeners are sitting, because it's $130.
You know, I figured it was going to be in that range. And I also figure that he's going to do a bang-up business with this book, because the really die-hard Beatles and Paul McCartney fans, they're going to buy two. They're going to buy one that they can flip through and love, and they're going to buy one that they're going to stash away in a vault somewhere.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. But and don't forget, when the book was published, it debuted on the New York Times bestseller list at number one.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of
just,
course.
Just letting you know. And we're not surprised.
Yeah. So this week's book is?
It's called The Lyrics by Paul McCartney. It's published by Live Right, and it's $130.
Ouch. And what other books do you suggest in this genre? Well, it's cheaper than gas these days. What other books do you suggest in this genre?
Well, you could get more satisfaction out of this book. Well, first of all, I suggest if when we're talking about Beatles and lyrics, there's a book that was done and published in 1969 called The Beatles Illustrated Lyrics by Alan Aldrich, who's a friend of the Beatles. And it did very well, it was a bestseller, and it's been reissued a couple of times. But it was the first time that they incorporated images with the song lyrics. Yeah, so it was it was a great book. I have my copy of it, but it's now regarded as one of the must-haves, you know, for any Beatles fan. If you have a Beatles library, is the Beatles Illustrated Lyrics. And also, there's this publisher of coffee table books called the Black Dog and Limenthal Publishers. They've done a series of books called All the Songs, and that's what it is. It's every song that focusing on one legendary rock group or rock singer, you know, in chronological order, in the same kind of format as the lyrics, you know, with the complete lyrics, you know, what album it came from, and the stories behind them, with plenty of pictures. And it started with the Beatles, which is one book I don't have yet. But also, you could get the same book in the series, in the All the Songs series, with the Rolling Stones, David Bowie, Bruce Springsteen, Queen, and Bob Dylan.
Excellent. Again. So this week's book again is?
It's called The Lyrics by Paul McCartney. It's published by Live Right, and it's $130, but so well worth it.
Yeah, but I notice you always pause when you say it, like you can't believe it yourself. Anyway, and how can people find you besides standing at an Instabank machine trying to get money out to buy Paul's book?
Yeah, well, it's not outside the Cavern in Liverpool, not yet at least, but in the pages of the Montreal Times. It's you can get it every week, either in print or digital or on the website at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
And remember, Blackbird sings in the dead of night.
Stuart Nelman, who thankfully didn't do another Liverpudlian accent, with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. I do have a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you, though. And, of course, an idiot of the day. So let's get right to it. 54-year-old Marilyn McMichael of Queens, New York, was reported missing in January by two of her foster sisters, Simone Best Jones and Charmin McElrath. They had not seen or heard from her since June of 2020, when she called them during the first wave of COVID-19 and saying that she wanted to go to the hospital. McElrath said they did go to her apartment, but that she didn't come to the door. Best Jones said that wasn't unusual for McMichael. She wouldn't talk to us for years because she didn't want to. She was particular and peculiar. When they tried to file a missing person report in January of this year, officials said they couldn't because they weren't next of kin. And police told them McMichael might have just been on vacation. The sisters asked the building manager to go with them to the apartment, but when the master key didn't work, they never tried again. But on April 26th, as New York City Housing Authority construction workers did maintenance on scaffolding outside her bedroom window, they saw McMichael's skeleton on her bed. The sisters announced her death on Facebook. "We wanted her to have a voice through us, knowing I was here and I had a life on this earth," McElrath said. See, this is the problem when your entire life can be paid for by automatic direct debit. If I had gone unnoticed for that long, some of my creditors at least would have been sniffing around long before 2 years went by. And if you've tried to order from a fast food restaurant recently, you may have noticed a longer wait time for your service. In Pittsburgh, a guy named Laz Tantalo shared a video where he walked into a Burger King restaurant on a busy Friday afternoon, at least what normally would have been a busy Friday afternoon, and there was not a single employee or customer inside. As he said in the video,
"Showed up to this Burger King on Noblestown Road, and there is nobody in here. Nobody in here. I went through the drive-thru, nothing."
He even opened the door, but found no one in the kitchen.
"Anybody here? Hello?"
It was later learned that a single employee who showed up for their shift that day just left. Well, you can imagine somebody showing up for work one day and nobody's in the place. What are you hanging around for? A manager eventually showed up to lock the doors until the restaurant could be staffed. Remember Burger King's old jingle?
"Have it your way, have it your way at Burger King, with Burger King."
Apparently that's only accurate now if you just make it yourself. And we have another empty restaurant story. A trespassing suspect with his pants open and genitals exposed explained to Florida police that he was doing a chant and was cleansing himself spiritually when he was discovered at 2:15 a.m. on the premises of a closed Mexican restaurant. Cops say that 29-year-old Kenneth Gray tripped a silent alarm after jumping a fence at the Red Mesa Cantina in St. Petersburg. When officers arrived at the restaurant, Gray was seated inside a fenced area near the outdoor bar with his pants open and genitals exposed. Gray was detained and subsequently charged with loitering and prowling, which is a misdemeanor. After being read his rights, Gray reportedly acknowledged trespassing, and that's when he told police he was doing a chant and was cleansing himself spiritually. Gray is locked up in lieu of $250 bond and has been ordered to stay away from the restaurant. His rap sheet includes prior convictions for trespassing, obstructing police, and possession of an open container of alcohol. Question: is it really exposing yourself if you're doing it in the wee hours of the morning with no one around before the cops show up? I'm just asking for a friend. And finally, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the idiot of the day.
A man who reported his truck stolen in Hilliard, Ohio, was arrested after authorities learned he stole the truck 5 days earlier in Delaware County. Hilliard police said 36-year-old Brett Redd of Columbus reported his truck was stolen by his passenger from a gas station. Police were able to catch up to the truck. The suspect, identified as David Harrison, ran from the vehicle but was arrested in a nearby residential neighborhood. Hilliard police later learned that the truck was originally stolen by Redd on May the 4th. Both men have been charged with receiving stolen property. Now why? Oh, why? If you're driving around in a stolen vehicle and it gets stolen, would you report said stolen vehicle to the police? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0667. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0667. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including KDXRadio.com, TrueTalkRadio.com, streaming on Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, WLSLLPFM in Dade City, Florida, CKUWFM in Winnipeg, CFMU in Hamilton, CKLU in Sudbury, and Local 107.3 FM in St. John. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.